Boker Tov, everybody. Really a special thank you for coming. I know it's a different day, a different time. And so thank you very much. Of course, that's why we'll talk. I mean, anyways, we should, but for sure we'll talk on Shavuot as opposed to on the Seder. Please God, we'll resume our Seder class a week from Friday. Okay. So just a few ideas. We said that we titled this What Happened at Sinai. We'll see how we're going to get to. The real answer is I have no idea because I wasn't there. Nobody, I know the Midrashim say I was there. But like, that's very nice in a midrashic level, but on the pshat, I was not there. And, we'll go through some of the ideas of, Matan Torah, see what the Gemara has to say. I hope we'll see how far we get. Of course, as Mike mentioned over the years, and I'm sure other people have mentioned different, you know, exactly how far removed Torah is from Shavuot, we can debate, but it's 1,000% clear that the Torah never tells us the day we got the Torah on. Whether there are hints at the Torah, okay, you can argue that. But the bottom line is the Torah doesn't make a big deal on the day we received the Torah. The Torah makes a relatively big deal. I mean, on the receiving of the Torah, it makes a bigger deal about the Exodus. We've spoken about that. And we have many, many mitzvot relating to the Exodus, the mezuzah and tefillin and honest weights. I mean, so Zecher Litzi Mitzrayim is everywhere. Tzitzis everywhere. Zecher Litzi Mitzrayim. We don't have any mitzvot Zecher LeKabbalat HaTorah, you know, Zecher LeMamad Har Sinai. Because that's basically the simple reason, because that's every day. We need once a year to eat matzah and once a year to focus on tshuva and once a year to know, to appreciate our home. So we leave our home and sit in the sukkah. And you know what? We need once a year to do these things. We don't want to have the whole year to, we're not going to fast every year and we're not going to blow shofar every day. But Torah is, of course, every day. B'chol yom yu beinecha kachadashim, every day they should be like new. Every day is a new Kabbalat HaTorah. So we can't have a date to assign to Kabbalat HaTorah. I've, my theory, I mean, based on Mordechai Breuer, I mentioned other times that, this was just a brilliant move by our sages, because in the Torah, Shavuot is only agriculture, as we were talking now, the environment. You can tie that into what's going on in the environment. Clearly, the Torah is very concerned about the environment. Bal Tashchit, I mean, the whole notion of the world, Peru, Vru, Miluot, Arts, Vechiv Shua. The first mitzvah to conquer the land means, you know, you have to keep the land. You can't destroy the land. So that's obvious. And we all the mitzvot that apply agriculturally on these holidays. So, of course, we want to put a modern twist. It's not even like a far thing. It's obvious. That's the simple pshat, the idea of, you know, the importance of maintaining the environment. So the holiday of Shavuot, like Pesach and Sukkot, is agriculturally based in Torah. The only difference is that the Pesach and Sukkot have a historical dimension. The truth of the matter is the historical dimension of Sukkot is very little. It's one verse in Dvarim Kaf Gimel. The Torah mentions Sukkot 7 times, and only once does it say you have to sit in the sukkah. One of the times is Hakel. That's the last one, that you have to gather the people on this Sukkot every 7 years and the king rings. And the other 5 times, it's all about the agriculture. Lekachtem lechem b'yom harishon priyei tzedar. You take the lulav and the etrog. It's Chag Hasif. B'tkufat Hashana, if you look twice in Shemot, but it does mention the Sukkot. We have to sit in Sukkot because God redeemed us through Sukkot on our journey from Egypt to Israel. So, okay, well, we focus that. And Pesach, of course, obviously the historical aspect is very dominant. But the Torah has no historical dominance for Shavuot. But as Mordechai Breuer explains, I have to reread the article. It's been a while since I read it, but it's always a creative thinker. This is really a brilliant move of the sages, and that in the year 7, when the temple is destroyed and Jews are exiled. So very nice. You're living in Poland in the 14th century. Like, very nice. Bikurim. What meaning does that have? There's no meaning to Shavuot. So the rabbis created a meaning. They didn't invent it out of thin air. If you look in the Torah, it's sort of, we don't know when, but we know they came to Arshin in the 3rd month. The Gemara says that was on Rosh Chodesh, but okay, I don't know. Could have been any time. We don't know how long they were there. Until God told Moshe to come up the mountain. But it's more or less around this time. So, okay. So we decided maybe the weakness of the Jewish people, maybe we did need a date to focus on Kabbalat the Torah, whatever it is. But that became, that's obviously the focus of the Torah. Now, I compare it to like on Shemini Atzeret, right? So Shemini Atzeret has no mitzvot, just like there are no mitzvot on Shavuot. No, you know, no shofar, no lulav, no, cheesecake doesn't count. So there is no actual mitzvot on Shavuot, just like there are no mitzvot on Shmini Atzeret, perhaps the mitzvah of Simcha, Vita Ach Sameach. What was Shmini Atzeret? Shmini Atzeret was a day after such an intense period. It's not really just Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. It's really Pesach, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. Shmini Atzeret, the holiday season is now over. We're going into the winter, agriculture. The holidays are in the spring, summer, and fall. Now we're beginning the, you know, the fall season, winter, no holidays. So let's have a day, just, you know, just the two of us, God and the Jewish people. Sukkot is a universal holiday. The 70 parim we bring for the 70 nations. So Shmini Atzeret is a unique relationship between God and the Jewish people, but we don't do anything. It's just the love of God and the Jewish people. So that can work for one day. But when you live in Chutz Laaretz, it doesn't work so well. 2 days, you go out of your mind. So the rabbis created this new holiday, Simchas Torah. Wow. It's not even mentioned in the Talmud Simchas Torah. Zman Matan Torteinu and Shavuot is mentioned. The Torah already in the Talmud, there is a linkage between them. But Simchat Torah is a made up holiday. Obviously reading the Torah every week is made up. It's the most important rabbinic mitzvah there is. The rabbis have 5 million mitzvot, and by far, like the reading the Torah is like 80% of importance, and all 4,999,999 are the rest of the 20%. Because if we didn't have Parshat Hashavua, nobody would open up a Chumash. Because when's the last time you opened up a Yoshua or a Yeshayahu or a Zephaniah? We'll open up, please God, next week in our Siddur class, a Pasuk in Zephaniah. I never opened up Zephaniah before, right? So we would never open up the Chumash. Don't think we would. And our whole life revolves around Parshat Hashavua. That was the most brilliant and most important rabbinic law to read Parshat Hashavua. But that's all rabbinic. That's all. And it was 3 years, 1 year. So Simchas Torah comes in the Middle Ages. So we created it sort of yesh me'ayin out of the blue because we needed something to do. So in that sense, in many ways that Shavuot became the holiday, we had to create something. Otherwise, the day really doesn't have any meaning. It's a yontif, but what to do? Okay, enough of that. Okay, now there are three holidays that the truth of the matter, our tradition associates with the receiving of the Torah. And those three holidays are? Got very quiet. I mean, it's been quiet the whole time, but. Okay, Tova, I'm going to pick on you. What are the three holidays that are related to Kabbalah Torah? My older sister, you know, I'm allowed to pick on her. What are the three holidays that are, that are related to Kabbalah HaTorah? One is Shavuot, of course. What are the other two?
You'll forgive my jet lag brain.
Got back from Israel yesterday. Fine, we'll forgive her. Who should I pick on? Okay, so number two is Yom Kippur. That's the real Kabbalah. That's the other reason that really, we didn't originally, and maybe we shouldn't have celebrate Kabbalah Torah on Shavuos, because that Torah got broken, you know? God gave Moshe the Torah. It was very nice. It lasted 40 days. Oh, 40 days got broken. And we didn't know if that would be it for the Jewish people. It was not at all certain the Jewish people would continue. God made Moshe a plan. We'll start a new nation. We'll start from scratch. So obviously Shavuos has nothing to do with Kabbalah Torah, which is a day of mourning almost, like we do on Shivasar B'Tammuz. That's the original region. Shivasar B'Tammuz, that's the day the Talmud asserts that Moshe broke the Luchot. If he got the Torah on Shavuot, on the 6th of Sivan, so 40 days later is the 17th of Tammuz, and that's when he broke the Luchot. And of course, he went for 40 days. That takes us to Rosh Chodesh Elul, and God said he wasn't ready yet to forgive. So another 40 days. So until Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur is day of Kabbalah Torah, and that's why Yom Kippur, the Talmud says, is the happiest day of the year. Why did God forgive us on Yom Kippur? Well, why, it's a forgiveness, i.e., here's the Torah again. In other words, the covenant was broken. So when God forgives us, it means we reestablish the covenant. Reestablishing the covenant, the Torah was given again. So we assume the Torah that we have today for the last 3,400 years was not given on Shavuot, it was given on Yom Kippur. That's the real day to celebrate the Kabbalah Torah. And the Talmud says we do. It's just as Rav Soloveitchik notes, you can't fast and celebrate the Torah on the same day. The moods are a little bit too different. So therefore we celebrate the receiving of the Torah on the 9th of Tishrei. And if you look in the Torah, the Torah says that Yom Kippur is the 9th at night, right? The Talmud is very, very baffled by that expression. Why don't we say the 9th at night is the 10th? right? The day starts at night. Why don't we say the 10th? So the Talmud says, whoever eats and drinks on the 9th is as if they, it's as important as fasting on the 10th. It's as if they fasted for 2 days. Amazing. In other words, it's harder to fast, so you get more reward when the mitzvah is harder. So eating on the 9th, you get the reward as if you fasted in, on the 10th. The same thing. So in other words, Yom Kippur consists of two distinct opposite mitzvot, to party and to eat, to celebrate receiving of the Torah. Okay, that's great. That's the 9th. Then the 10th, we have to be very serious. You know, he forgave us, but maybe we're doing more sin. Maybe we're breaking the covenant again. So therefore, Yom Kippur has this dual aspect. But Yom Kippur is the happiest day of the year, along with Tu B'Av, but that's for a different reason, because it's a day of Kabbalah HaTorah. So that's the second, that's the real day we should be celebrating Shavuot, quote unquote. Okay, what's the third holiday on our calendar that celebrates the receiving of the Torah? Hopefully we'll see that inside in a few minutes. No, Purim. You never heard the rabbi give a whole speech. Kimu v'kiblu, the Jews reaccepted Torah. Hadar kiblua b'mei Achashverosh. The Jews accepted the Torah again during Purim time. We'll see that hopefully soon. That's generally assumed, not generally assumed, the Talmud says it black and white. That was the oral law. Like the Jews didn't really accept it doesn't exactly say that, but that's what we assume, that the Torah is reaccepted. That the Talmud does say in the time of Achashverosh Purim. Yom Kippurim, you know, Purim is a day like, Yom Kippurim is a day like Purim. You know, that both of days have Kabbalat HaTorah. Purim also, therefore, it's a joyous day. Therefore, we eat and drink. We party. That's a little bit of a different party than the 9th of Tishrei. But we really have three holidays on our calendar. It's just that Yom Kippur and Purim, we focus on the other themes. We don't focus so much. I don't think so many people at Suta HaMafseket talk about Kabbalat HaTorah, you know, but that's really what it is. And the same thing on Purim, we don't focus on it. But those are the dates. On Shavuot, there's nothing else to focus on. So we focus on Kabbalat HaTorah. Okay.
Rabbi, what about Simchas Torah?
So Simchas Torah is the reading of the Torah. It's not the receiving of the Torah, right? If I'm not mistaken,
We
celebrate that we received the Torah, or that we've learned the Torah. You're right. It's a little bit of a connection, but you want to say that's an extension of Yom Kippur in a sense, but right, that was added. So you could throw that in too. But Simchas Torah is not so much the receiving the Torah, it's that we read the Torah. That's the Maggid of Dubna, I think, has a famous one of his parables. Why don't we finish the Torah on Shavuot? In other words, why do we finish it on Simchas Torah? Or why do we party? If I remember the whole thing. So he says, in fact, new on Shavuot, we didn't know what was in the Torah. There's nothing to celebrate. Maybe we're not going to like it. I mean, lots of people thought, I came up in my classes in chat. I tell people, there's certain parts of the Torah I wish weren't there. What can I tell you? I don't agree. I don't agree. It's not, I don't mean to sound heretical, but it wouldn't bother me if certain parts of the Torah weren't there. But I accept, God is, who am I? I'm a nobody, divine wisdom, of course. So we accept the mitzvot, even if we don't like them. We'll get there also. So we don't know, Shavuot, where are they going to party? Maybe, oh my God, I read the Torah. The Jews were a little bit idiotic. Nasa Benishma, they accepted the Torah. As the Gemara says, Amba Baziza, what a stupid people. What idiot signs a contract without knowing what's in it. The Gemara says a little bit nuts, but Amba, out of their minds. Nasa Benishma. Is that really true? We need a long shear today, but I'm teaching at chat at 10:40, so I do have a deadline. But anyway, so who knows if they're going to like it? Only on Simchas Torah. Now we read the whole Torah. Ah, beautiful. Torah is so beautiful. The values, it's guides for life in the crazy world that we live in. What better guidance can there be than the beauty of the Torah? So that's why we celebrate on Simchat Torah at the end. Okay. But let's start with this idea. Did the Jewish people, do we like the Torah as, so to speak? Do we have to like everything in the Torah or not? So this, we're going to start with, Rashi. Part of this, and we may have done, bits and pieces over the years, but, if so, a review is always great. And if not, what's going on here? Okay. Everybody can see by the barrel, he may call the email Laymore. Everybody see that? Okay. So, what's the problem here? The problem was the word Laymore. The word Laymore doesn't make any sense because as, I mentioned a number of times, the word Laymore doesn't mean saying. I know that's how they translate it in English, but that's a redundant word. If God spoke to Moshe, or if God spoke, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe, Obviously, he said something. When God spoke to Moshe saying, well, obviously, if he spoke, he said. So the word lemor always means a response. By the Bereshit Moshe, lemor means to say over, not to say. It's not that God spoke to Moshe saying, God spoke to Moshe that Moshe should say this over to the Jewish people. By the Bereshit Moshe, lemor just means, otherwise it's Lashon Hara. When somebody tells you something in private, you can't repeat it. How does Moshe know? Maybe this was the direct communication God to Moshe. Maybe he wasn't supposed to share that. So the word lemor is the permission and the obligation that God spoke to Moshe to say over. So the problem is, God is speaking to the whole people. So who's saying over anything? What's there to say? There's nothing to say. So Rashi, Rashi has this fascinating comment. Now you'll understand, like, is Nechama Levi what's with you? What's bothering Rashi? Why does Rashi say this? What's bothering Rashi is the word lemor doesn't fit. Well, what do you mean? God spoke all these things to say over. Who are they saying it over to? They're all there. So Rashi says, Milamed, So Rashi says, Milamed Sheyone Malhein Hein Valav Lav. It teaches us that the Jewish people said, yes, yes, no, no. When God said, I'm the Lord your God, yes. Do not have other gods, no. Keep Shabbat, yes, yes, yes. Honor your parents and mothers, yes, yes. Don't murder, no, no. Al-Hain-Hain, all the positive commandments, they said yes, yes, yes. And on the negative commandments, they said no, no. Very nice. Rashi is based on a Mechilta. And this, I love this idea. Lemor. So Rashi, as he 99% of the time does, he's quoting other sources. The brilliance of Rashi is how he quotes the sources, what sources he quotes. But of course, you know, it's so much more meaningful, which we never, I rarely do. It's something the Nechama Leibowitz tried to drill home in us, that you always have to look up the source of Rashi and compare the way Rashi quotes the source and the original source. So if you take a look in the Mechilta is the Tanaitic commentary. This is even pre-Mishnah, perhaps. I'm not an expert. I don't know exactly when the Mechilta was written, but it's Tanaitic, from the time of the Mishnah. Lemor, Shayim Rim Al Hein Hein Valav Lav. That's Rashi. They said, and yes, yes, and no, no. Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Oh, we're going to have an argument. That's Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva Omer Al Hein Hein Valav Hein. Oh, no, no. Rabbi Akiva said, no, that's not what they answered. Rabbi Akiva says they answered yes and yes. When God said, I'm Lord your God, they said yes. And when God said, don't murder, they said yes. Very nice. What's going on here? So now Rashi only quotes the first opinion. He only quotes Rabbi Shmuel. He does not quote both opinions. But this is a machloket. Did the Jewish people answer yes or no to the negative commandments? Who cares? Obviously, who cares? So Rabbi Soloveitchik, in his brilliance, understands there's a fundamental debate going on here. What's the debate? The debate is, did the Jewish people willingly accept the commandment, or they really didn't want to? So Rabbi Ishmael says, the way the Rav, I think, understood it, you could really do it either way, but the way the Rav understands it, yes, yes, of course we're going to keep Shabbat. Of course we're going to honor parents. Don't kill. No, no, we would never kill. Of course. We agree wholeheartedly. No, no, we would never do that. And Rabbi Akiva says, yes, Daddy, I won't kill. I what can I do? We'll leave that one. Yes, I won't be jealous. In other words, it's no, I would never be jealous. It's okay. I would prefer to be jealous, but what can I do? God, you commanded us. Okay, so I'm willing to accept your authority. So the Rav turns this argument, this sort of crazy, like meaningless argument that the Jewish people answer yes or no to the negative commandments, whereas the Jewish people accepting the commandments. Of course, we love these commandments. Thank you. Or I do the commandments because I have to. Believe, if I didn't have to keep kosher, I'd eat a cheeseburger. Well, what's the big deal? Or no, a cheeseburger. So that's the machloka of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Did the Jewish people willing to accept the Torah? Now, the idea is developed further. I'm going to share my screen again by the Rambam. The Rambam, in a relatively famous, you know, I don't know, I say, maybe I shouldn't say it's famous, but it's, Hold on. That's, if you want to mute yourself, now that I'm share screen, I can't mute.
Yeah,
Hold on. So the Rambam, this is, you see, eight chapters, like six. The eight chapters is the Shmona Prakim of the Rambam. The Shmona Prakim, the eight chapters, this is the Rambam's introduction to Pirkei Avot. The Rambam wrote a lot of introductions, by the way. His introduction to the Mishnah, and he wrote beautiful introductions. I don't know how often people learn them, but they're good to learn. Okay. So the Rambam here, we'll start here. I'll do it. Philosophers, I'll do it in English. Of course, the Rambam wrote it in Arabic. So even the Hebrew is a translation. So we can translate into English. Philosophers maintain that though the man of self-restraint performs moral and praiseworthy deeds, yet he does them desiring and craving all the while for immoral deeds, but subduing his passions and actively fighting, allowing to do these things for which his faculties, I'm reading too quickly. Okay. The saintly man. That's it. The saintly man is guided in his action by that which is his inclination and disposition prompt him, in consequence of which he acts morally from innate longing and desire. The Rambam says that the non-Jewish philosophers claim that the highest level is to do the mitzvot, to do what you have to do because you want to do it. That's your nature. Your innate longing and desires. Philosophers unanimously agree the latter is superior and more perfect than the one who has to curb his passions. I would really like to commit this sin and steal, but I don't do it because God commanded. That's much worse. It would be much better to have no Yetzer Hara to do the sin. That's what all the philosophers think. Okay, so he goes on. And he quotes, you can find sources like this in our tradition, etc. But the Rambam says, hold on, that doesn't work. Kasher, I'm going to do in the Hebrew and I'll translate. I prefer it. Kasher chakru divrei chachamim b'zeinyan. When we investigate the words of our sages, nimsalehem shemita beit laveirot, one who yearns to sin, banichsaf aleihem, but he subdues his desire, yoter chashuv, he's more important, yoter shalem, he's more complete, masher lo timita ve'aleihem. You should want to sin. You should want to do a sin. How do we show we accept God's Torah? By not sinning. Of course we want to sin. That's why we have our Torah fault. The lo yitzta'er b'hanachatam achamru shekoli shashir yeh yoter chashuv yoter shalem tiyat shikotol la'veirot. And the sages say whoever's greater, right? I mean, you may have heard this idea that the bigger the tzaddik, the bigger the yetzer hara he has. The more important the person has, the more powerful he has, tiyat shikotol la'veirot. He's yearning for sins. Yitzta'er b'hanachan, his pain when he can't sin, yoter gadol, is greater. And the rabbi say, who's ever bigger than his friend, Yitzro Gadol, he has a bigger evil inclination. Below Dayam, and that's not enough, they say he gets more of a reward because Lipum Sara Agra. According to the effort is the reward, and since it's hard not to cheat in business. It's hard to follow all the sexual things of the Torah. So one who does, it's hard, he's going to get greater reward. And furthermore, she seems to be Adam, you should want to sin. You shouldn't sin. They warned us. Not say it's my nature not to sin. No. This is the beautiful example the Rambam gives. A person should not say, I don't want to eat meat and milk. He should say, I want a cheeseburger. I want a cheeseburger. It's a funny example. I don't want to wear shan. I want that wool and linen suit. Wow, that piece of linen and that $3,000 suit. I want to wear that. If she love all erva, I want to have an affair with this. I don't know if it's an affair. And then it's fascinating that the Rambam, I assume it's not an affair because that would be an ethical sin. The Rambam's going to distinguish, but, two single people or two gay people, I would very much like to sin and the sexual immoral sin. Well, it's two consenting adults. What does it bother anybody that two gay men live together? Who cares? Well, why should that bother us? They're not hurting me. They're not hurting you. I would love to do it. What can you do? Ella Efshi, I want to eat a cheeseburger. It's funny, the examples. I want to eat a cheeseburger. Okay. I want to wear shatnez. New. How big a desire to wear shatnez. And then erva, that's a really big desire. And I really want to sin sexually, but God in heaven has forbidden me. Avisha Bashemaim has forbidden me to do that. And then the Rambam distinguish. They contradict each other. So he says, Shneim Emet, they're both true. They're both true. It depends what. So the Rambam says it depends what the sin is. If the Yanuim for Samim, if they're ethical, he says famous ideas that we all know is wrong. They're ethical, they're character sins. Murder, stealing, theft, Gzeil and Gever, two different times. Oh, nah, price fraud. Let's see, damages, to damage somebody who damaged you. Like more ra, to do bad to somebody who helped you. To curse your parents, to live as a, degrade your parents. Koyotse be'elu. These are all character ethical sins. These are things that ilmalek, though, even if they wouldn't be written in the Torah, you should do them. So those mitzvot, you should say, I really want to steal. I really want to hurt this person. I really don't want to respect my parents. But look, as the Torah says, no. That should be your nature. That's character. That's, even if it wouldn't be the Torah, you should do it. That's for sure. But the mitzvot of Allah Dvarim, Shamru Aleim Chakim Shokoveshe Titzro, when you conquer your desire, you're more important. That's that Torah Shmiyot. Those are the laws. We wouldn't know them on our own. If not for the Torah, there would be nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with eating a cheeseburger. There's nothing wrong with eating pork on Yom Kippur. If the Torah was a Jew who eats pork on Yom Kippur can be the most moral person in the world. He's not religious. Doesn't follow the Torah. What is that? It's not a bad guy. But we only do it because you should want to eat a pork. You should say in Yom Kippur, I want to eat now. You just don't because God said you can't. The only reason I don't do it is because of Torah. If a guy hates cheeseburgers and he doesn't eat them, not such a big mitzvah. He doesn't like cheeseburgers. But if a guy likes cheeseburgers and he doesn't eat them, of course, yeah, I guess you don't know if you like a cheeseburger until you eat it, but I'm not recommending that. But you can imagine if you would like a cheeseburger. People tell me lobster is very good. Okay, Baruch Hashem. So if I can't stand fish, so it's no big deal. I don't get any reward for not eating lobster. But the only reason I don't eat lobster, the only reason is the Torah says so. So that's what the Rambam says. And then he says, Ayumar Adam, but you should never say, I wish I could kill that guy. I can't stand him. I'm going to kill him. Oh, I wish I could steal. I wish I could degrade. Oh, what can I do? God, that's not good. That's not good. But here again, he quotes the same examples. Basar v'chalav, shatnes and arayot. I find it fascinating. I was alluding to that arayot. The Rambam does not consider arayot a normal ethical wrong, like murder, theft, business stealing, that we should want to do naturally. But sexuality, it's not natural. Monogamy, waiting till marriage, apparently that's not part of the mitzvot. That they're just, you should want to do because they're done. They're part of the mitzvot. You have to struggle and there's nothing wrong and apparently everything right in saying, I wish I wouldn't have to keep this mitzvot. And the only reason I keep it is because God has commanded. So that's a very powerful reading in the Rambam. It's really quite an amazing piece. And I would say I comment that sometimes I think tragically we have reversed the Rambam in modern society. Many people, their desire is to cheat in business and desires to do all these sexual sins and all these other things. Oh, when it comes to kashrut, oh my God, they're so strict that all the chumras, I would never go near non-kosher food. They go insane. That's to desire non-kosher food. I just think our society in many ways is upside down. It's like, it's backwards. So, I think you often find I think it's such a beautiful Rambam and the Rambam is being so realistic and so human and there's nothing wrong. So that was, hain, love. So I don't know. Maybe Rashi doesn't agree with the Rambam. It seems that Rashi, when he's quoting only Rabbi Yishmael's view that the Jewish people said it, yes, yes, no, no. Rashi's saying no. That's the way Rav Soloveitchik is explaining it. That Rashi is saying no, everything. God, of course not. God, you forgave us to steal. Why would I? I could never think of seeing it. I'm sorry. I could never. Right. Okay. But even presumably we would be on kashrut, although Rashi doesn't directly say because the mitzvot and the Ten Commandments are pretty logical. In other words, even the Rambam would agree that when it comes to lo tirtzach, you shouldn't say, oh, I wish I could kill, but I can't. But anyway, there seems to be some discrepancy of views here. Obviously, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel are arguing about this. But how important is it to say, I like what the Torah says, or no, I'm sorry, I wish I didn't have to keep the Torah, but what can I do? And I often say, I'll say this, and I don't want to get into it, but I'm sort of alluding to it. I think this is a huge, important point when we deal with what's become a huge issue today, LGBTQ, and Orthodox people, many, I mean, I'm sure everybody in this class here knows at least five people who are gay, I'm sure. And you know, I'm sure most of you have a relative who's gay, because it's a statistical, you know, chance. I don't know, whatever, 3%, whatever the numbers are. So, you know, where our community is struggling greatly with these issues. But you see what the Rambam is saying, it's natural, it's okay, there's nothing wrong with it. Okay, somebody sins, people sin in all kinds of areas. But the attitude towards it is a little bit different. It's not, from what I can read in the Rambam, he doesn't directly say homosexuality, but he says arayot, says sexual sins. The Rambam includes in that area where it's not so natural, where it's okay to say, I wouldn't observe this unless God had commanded me. No, no, that's just, you can totally disagree with me. And okay, let's move on. Any quick questions I'm happy to take, and then I'm going to move on to what the a couple Gemara, the one more famous than the other, I think, about what happened at Har Sinai itself. That was just the first pasuk. Yocheved, do you have a question? I see your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that Rav Soloveitchik elaborates on this point in a different shiur.
Okay.
Which is on Yosef and Yehuda, and he calls Yosef.
I don't hear you anymore.
Ma'ula and Yehuda Hamoshel Benash.
Okay, we didn't hear the whole thing, but I said that's a shiur in Yehuda and Yosef. If you could send that to me, I would be most grateful. By the way, Yocheved has an article in the most recent issue in Tradition that I just received, and they're doing on Rav Soloveitchik. The whole issue mentioned the vote of Rav Soloveitchik. So Yocheved has an article in the last. I hope it's okay that I give you a little bit of, you know, PR. But anyways, you can read it there. Okay. Yeah. So I'm not aware of that shear of the Rav on Yehuda and Yosef. So I'd be very happy if you could send me an email later and or post it in the chat box, etc. Okay. Let's discuss. No, this idea, by the way, did the Jewish Torah, it's not exactly the same, but very similar. Did the Jewish people accept the Torah willingly, or they want to do it? So this is part of, it's mind-boggling if we think about this. The Gemara on Shabbat, right? So there is no Masechet Shavuot, right? There's a tractate in the Talmud on Pesach, on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, even on Purim. But there's nothing on Hanukkah. And there's nothing on Shavuot. Both of those, by the way, are in Masechet Shabbat. Both of those are discussed in Masechet Shabbat. B'mem Adlikin, about lighting candles on Shabbat. That's how the Gemara segues into lighting about Hanukkah. The one on Shavuot has to do with Tuma Betara, the Mishnah in Shabbos, and talk about the 3 days they had to separate from their wives, and the Shloshet Yemei Hagbalah, was it 2 days or 3 days? Therefore, was the Torah given on the sixth or the fifth, the sixth, or seventh of Sivan? So the Gemara there has a discussion, a 2-3 page discussion about the events in Har Sinai. So we'll take a look at one or two of them. So the Gemara on Shabbat 88A, that's Daf 88, as the famous statement, Vayitzatzu b'tachtit ha'har. The Jewish people encamped, tachtit, that's a strange word, under the mountain, tachat, under the mountain. So what does it mean? It means at the foot of the mountain. Amar Rav Avdimi Barchama Barchasam, Elamei Shekafa Kadosh Baruch Olam on Har Kigigit. It teaches us that God held the mountain on top of us, right, this famous teaching, like a barrel, a marlehem, iatem mekablim haTorah mitzvot. Guys, if you get the Torah, that's great. You don't have to accept the Torah. No problem. It's up to you. If you want it, great. Im lav, sham teik v'racham. If not, it's okay. You don't have to accept it. Just, this will be your burial place. That's all. I'm just letting you know. You don't want it. Good. Do want it. But if you accept the Torah, great. If not, bango. You drop the mount in your head, and that's your funerals. They're going to take place right away. So, Amar Avacha Bar Yaakov. Whoa, that's not fair. I Mikan Moda Arabala Raita. Wow. I now have a great excuse. I have a great excuse. I don't have to keep the Torah. I never agreed. You can't put a gun to somebody's head and make them sign a contract. That's invalid in Jewish law. God has to follow Jewish law. God can't force us to accept the Torah. We know, you know, Medrash, he went to all the nations in the world. You don't want it? Fine. I'm not going to make you take the Torah. So we have no God. We don't keep the Torah. I have a great excuse. How do they translate in English? I think the Jewish people can claim they were coerced, and therefore it's not binding. Yeah, Torah's not binding. That's amazing. Wow. I'm a Rabbah. So Rabbah says you're right. That trick worked for 1,000 years. First 1,000 years, all through in Tanakh. Ruth, Megillat Ruth, right? All those stories, and Shoftim, and Shmuel, and Malachim. Yeah, you're right. The Jewish people had a good excuse why they didn't accept Torah. It was forced upon them. But that excuse only worked, I said before, until Purim. The Jewish people willingly, beautifully accepted the Torah on Purim. The Jews accepted Kimu, or I don't know how to translate. They established and accepted Kimu Masha Kibu Kfar. They accepted what they had already accepted. In other words, you're right. Purim time, they realized they're going into exile. We need the Torah. Whatever it was, the Gemara doesn't explain. There was something about Purim that got the Jewish people to willingly accept the Torah that they hadn't done for 1,000 years. And therefore, for the first 1,000 years, we have a great excuse. Okay, what's the problem with this Gemara? Anybody bothered with this Gemara? Somebody, you have to be bothered by that Gemara.
It still can't obligate future generations.
Oh, so that doesn't bother me, as Rav Soloveitchik would say. That's a great question. That's not for this year. I'm happy to maybe discuss that another time. That's very nice. So the Jews at the time of Ahasuerus accepted it, but I never accepted it. That's actually a very, very important question that I never hear people talk about. Well, why do I have to keep the Torah? Because my mother is Jewish. I have to keep the Torah because I didn't choose that. That's an important question, not for now. But what other thing is troubling about this? What did everybody learn in kindergarten? Okay, what did you learn in grade one? As I tell my students all the time, you need a refund. What did everybody learn in grade one and grade two on Shavuos? What did they teach you every single year? I alluded to it. God went to all the nations of the world. You want the Torah.
They still said Nasev and Ishma.
Ah, Nasev and Ishma. We spoke about what happened to Nasev and Ishma? Oh, whoa. So, okay, let's go back and figure out what in the world happened to Nasev and Ishma. So Tosfot asked that question. I'm not going to get into Tosfot now, maybe. What is amazing, and I think it's very, very important. This is Shabbat 88a in the Sefaria breaking of the Gemara. It's paragraph 5, the way Sefaria breaks the page, you know. Okay, 88a, Shabbat. Let's go down a little bit to 88.7. Darash Rav Simai. Okay, this skip the number. The one in the middle is just continuing on. That's not for our purposes. When the Jewish people said, we will do, before they said, we will listen, we'll sign on the dotted line without knowing what's in. We're a little bit nuts, but God, we really trust you. You would never do anything bad for us. You love us. You're going to give us this beautiful Torah. So we're going to say, Nasa Benishma. So Shishim Ribo, 600, that's 600,000, 60,000, 600,000. 600,000 angels came down. L'chol achad v'Yisrael kashru lo shnei ketorim, because they're symbolically 600,000 Jews. Really 603,550, and that's of course only males between 20 and 50. But we assume, you know, all numbers are rounded off anyways, as they were in the parsha this week. So there's 600,000, crowns. So they put on 1.2 million crowns. One crown, everybody wore two crowns. How many crowns did Prince Charles wear at the coronation? I didn't see on Shabbos. I assume he wore, did he wear two crowns ever at the same time? I do not know. Echad keneged Nasa, they had one crown for Nasa, and Echad Nishma. Ah, the Kevan Shechatu, when they sinned, okay, then it's interesting. 1,200,000 angels. You needed twice the angels to take off the crowns and to put them on. Uperkum. Okay, and, all right, that's the Gemara. Fine, talks about that. I don't get it. Now, what should be the next line in the Gemara? Or it should have been the first line. This should not have been Darash Rabbi Simai. What should have it say? Darash. Rabbi Simon made an expansion of a verse, expounded on a verse. No. Examined the question. What it should be? It should be Meitiv. Rav Simai asked the question, how can you tell me the Jewish people, God held a mountain over their head? Didn't the Jewish people say Nasev and Ishma? And then the Gemara would give whatever answer Tosfot or other people give. The Gemara does not do that. The Gemara leaves these two contradictory statements back to back in the Gemara. The Gemara says, God held a mountain over our head. You want the Torah? Great, not. You're finished. And then, the Jewish people accepted the Torah. And it's our, what in the world is going on? You know what's going on? This is Judaism. We have many different views of what happened, and we don't have to reconcile. This is the basic fundamental difference between halakha and agada. Halakha is, we have to reconcile. We have contradictions in halakha. We say it every single morning. I like this a lot. 365 days a year, we say, v'chein shnei tuvim ha-machshishim zeh. We have one of the principles of Torah interpretation is to examine the contradictory verses. The Torah is full of contradictions. The Bible critics weren't stupid. They knew what they were talking about. They have different answers than we have. Yeah, they're working on a different premise, but they weren't stupid morons who just are out to get the Torah. The Torah contradicts itself left and right. That's the lonely man in the faith is Rabbi Soloveitchik's reconciliation of chapter 1 and chapter 2 in Bereishit, the two Genesis stories, totally contradict each other. Torah is full of contradiction. Until you find a third way to a third verse that somehow, this is here, that's there, we reconcile. But that's only in matters of halakha. Because you have to do something. Either you're going to eat matzah like this or like, right? Either matzah is an obligation one day or all 7 days. That's one of the contradictions. The Torah says you should eat matzah for 6 days. That's in Re'eh, I believe. And the Torah says in Bo and the other place you eat matzah in the Emor for 7 days. What is it? 6 or 7 days? That's a contradiction. We resolve the contradiction. How do we resolve the contradiction?
We eat it one day.
Only one day. Wow. That's none of the above. The Torah says 6 or 7. A contradiction. Okay. We throw them both out. We do one. It's amazing. In other words, 1 day obligation, 6 days permission, 7. Right, 1 plus 6 is 7, because it says in the Torah, the third verse, HaKatuv HaShlishi Be'erev Tochlu Matzot, in the evening you should eat matzah. So that's the Leil HaSeder. But that's only in halacha. We don't have to. We should not attempt. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that, because Tosfot, other people did try to reconcile this, but the Gemara had no interest in reconciling these two pieces, because the Gemara is not interested in history. I said, we don't know what happened inside. The rabbis don't. What, do you think God held up a mountain? Do we know what happens? We don't know. It doesn't matter, because the Torah is not history. The Torah doesn't tell us history. The Torah is talking to us. Some people need a mountain held over their head to accept Torah. And some people accept Torah because they love it, God, whatever you say. And both approaches are valid. Both of us, and that's why the Torah presents God. The Torah is not telling us what happened. Obviously, historically, only one of those two things can be true. In other words, it can't be. Now, of course, it can be half the people accepted willingly, half didn't. Or what some say, I think Tosfot has that answer. I think, 10 miles away, the Jewish people are going to accept it. Yeah, for of course. It was for 3 days back and forth with God and Moshe. Of course, we're going to accept it. When it came to morning of Shavuos, yeah, I don't know what we're getting into. So, they got cold feet. They slept in, according to the Midrash, right? They slept in, Tikkun Lo Shavuot. They slept in because they weren't so sure. So sometimes you want to do something, it's the right thing, you need a push. So you can reconcile it. Or the Tanhuma reconciles it, the written law and the oral law. The Jewish people were willing to accept the Torah. That's what God said. But the rabbis, it says in the Torah, keep Shabbos, don't light a fire on Shabbos. Okay, I won't light a fire on Shabbos. But I can't turn on the lights. I don't know, whatever. I can't write. Where to say that in the Torah? I don't say any of this stuff in the Torah. The rabbis make up all this stuff. I'm not willing to accept the oral law. It's the written law. Yeah, whatever it is, I don't really care. And everybody can reconcile, or I preferably don't reconcile it. We should live with the contradiction that Torah was accepted willingly and Torah was forced upon us. I think it's so beautiful. And I think that's how if you study more Gemara, you'll see this all the time. In Agadic passages, the Gemara presents wild views and it's very dangerous. You have to be careful that a rabbi doesn't only quote one view, like they want to have a particular, I can quote all the sources that the Jewish people accepted Torah willingly. They have to accept. They're all true, but you got to quote the other sources too. Both sources exist in our tradition. We have a multifaceted, rich, pluralistic, within limits, tradition. But I think that the fact that the Gemara presents it back to back and makes no attempt to reconcile these two, I think is very important. I just want to think, I'm going to throw out the question. You can think about it. I have an idea or two, but I don't really have a great, I guess it's part of what I'm saying. In other words, why do the rabbis want to say we accept Torah. So in other words, when the rabbis say we were forced, I think the rabbis, again, they're talking to us. They're not talking historical. They're saying it's okay. It's okay to only keep Torah because God holds a mountain over your head. And by the way, this Gemara, unlike the Rambam, they doesn't distinguish between ethical and ritual. This Gemara says the Torah Bichlal. Maybe that includes I shouldn't cheat in business. I also need a mountain held over my head. I also need laws and threat to go to jail if I cheat on my taxes, whatever. So I just think that's a beautiful idea. Okay, let's do we are not, I don't, we'll have time for both. So which maybe I know this is really, really dangerous. So what should I do? I should, we do the Gemara that Moshe goes up to Mount Sinai and he gets time passed to Rabbi Akiva's Beit Midrash, or the Gemara that talks about the 613 mitzvot go down to one. Okay. We can't vote. I have to decide which we're going to do. Okay. We're going to do the Gemara in Makot because I think it's less famous. And if we have time, we'll do the Gemara in Menachot, where Moshe Rabbeinu is transported to Rabbi Akiva's Beit Midrash, and he doesn't understand one word of what's going on. But let's see what we can do. So I'm going to open up the Gemara in Makot. As I'm sure you've heard me over the years, whatever mentioned, we do not have an agreed list of 613 mitzvot. Does not exist. Does not exist. Because the Gemara doesn't present it. The Gemara was of no interest, 613 mitzvot. As far as I know, and it, again, it's not in halakhic passages, and that's important. Only two places in the Talmud is the 613. One on Shabbos 88, I think it's 80, that we were talking about the Gemara, about breaking the look at the Taryag mitzvot. And the one we're going to see now, the end of Makot. Makot is, talks about, it's the extension really of Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin talks about the courts and the punishments of the courts. So really Makot, I think, used to be part of Sanhedrin. It used to be one Masechet. Makot are lashes, one of the penalties in theory. It wasn't often done, but the Torah has 207. The Rambam writes 207 sins. It's a pretty high number. There are only 365 negative commandments. So if you violate one of 207 that with warning and witnesses, all kinds of condition, we give you up to. The doctors have to assess how much you can do. It can't be too painful, but a little painful. I know this sounds barbaric for our generation. This is, we're not going to talk about that now. But the Gemara has 39 lashes that you would give, up to 39 lashes. So the end of Makot. So let's go to the end of Makot. It's right the last page in Masech and Makot. So where are we here? Makot 24a. Okay. That's 23b. Okay. So the Gemara says, Darash Rav Simlai. Rav Simlai made a drasha, right? That same word, Darash. He's introducing a new teaching. Sheish meyadu shloshes rei mitzvot namrulo lemoshe. There were 613 mitzvot were given. By the way, the Talmud never enumerates what they are. Flosh meyot v'shishim v'chameish lavim, 365 negative commandments. This is sort of well known. Kiminyan yimot hachama, every day is a new mitzvah. Every day, like the days of the sun, 365 days of the year, every day has a negative mitzvah. And the Zohar, apparently, I have not seen the list, goes through day by day which mitzvah goes. I know because I remember Rabbi Yudin listening from, was in New Jersey, I forget, where just retired, who taught at YU for many years, Rabbi Yudin. So I went through him speak and he spoke how Tisha B'Av, the Zohar says the mitzvah of Tisha B'Av is Gid Hanasha. Okay, whatever. Umatayim ba'arba'im u'shmona asar, 248, positive. Keneged Eved Rav Shalom. Eddie Reichman just wrote an article recently in his new book, his fascinating book on medicine. Is it true? Are there really two? Who we haven't really quite exactly figured out what these 248 limbs are in the body. Medicine, it's a fascinating article. There's obviously people, I guess people in medicine more have struggled with that issue, but that's what the Gemara says, 248 limbs in the body. How do I know this? Okay, that's Rav Simlai. He doesn't give any proof, no evidence, nothing. Just a tradition, whatever, I don't know. Amar Rav Menuna. So another rabbi, Rav Menuna, says, my kra, what, how does he know this? I don't know if Rav Simlai, he's just a founding Rav Simlai, it appears not. I don't know if Rav Simlai had this idea, but Rav Menuna says, whether it's his idea or he's attributing to Rav Simlai, it doesn't matter. Torah tziva lanu Moshe morasha kilat Yaakov. Torah, Moshe commanded us the Torah. So you already know there's something funny here. Torah bikamatria, the numerical value of Torah, is Sheet Meot Chad Re is 611. Taf is 400. Resh is 200. Vav is 6. And Hay is 5. 611. That's great. Anochi velo yem yipikvar Rosh Amun. But the first of the two 10 commandments or 14 commandments, whatever commandments there are, Anochi and lo yeah, they heard from God, right? You know, the first two commandments, according to Rashi and according to certain traditions, but not all, for sure not all. According to some traditions, the first two commandments were said by God. Anochi, God speaking, lo yelecha. By the third one, lo tisat shem Hashem, we go to third person. So that is Moshe talking. So 611 gave Moshe, two gave God. Now already this is problematic because the second commandment already has three mitzvot in it, three of the 613. It's not just, it's one, maybe one dibra. Lo yelohim achim lo tishtachav alem velo tavdeim is, I think the Sefer HaChinuch either counts three or four mitzvot on that second commandment. Secondly, many people say Anochi was not given, Anochi is not a mitzvah. It's a statement introducing. Well, what do you mean? I keep 612 mitzvah. The one belief in God, I don't go for that one. Like, that's insane. You can't have any mitzvah unless you have a commander. So many commentaries say Anochi is not a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah. It's a precondition to mitzvah. So, and then the Ramban disagrees with this whole premise of 2 and 10. He says, no, God said all 10. So already, you know, this is there's lots of things going on here. It doesn't matter. It's a garata. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be historically accurate. It's expressing an idea, right? We can have conflicting agadot. So that's fine. Here's the next part. This is mind boggling. To me, this is one of the most, in the Ripley's, believe it or not, if you want to see the most unbelievable in the 2711 double-sided pages, what is the most unbelievable Gemara? I think this has got to rate either number one or number one or number one, like in real estate, you know. Bad Aviv Amidan al Acharitri. King David came along and he said, no, you know what? 613, that's too many mitzvot. That's too many mitzvot. We're going to do only 11. Let's read Rashi. Shebetchila hayut tzadikim. When the Torah was given, the Jewish people were righteous. I don't know. Is that really true? Okay. Anyways, the original givers were tzadikim. Bayu yecholim lekabel ol mitzvot harbe. They could accept a lot of mitzvot. He give those people out of Egypt. They were righteous like anything. And you could give them 613 mitzvot. You know, our generation, 2023, you know, people are going off the derech, not so many religious, you know, it's not too much. Modern society, it could drive me nuts. 613 mitzvot. Okay. If you had to keep all 613, nobody can keep all 613. That's too hard for people. So David said, it's okay. So David said, 11's okay. Just keep 11 mitzvot. G'day, I mean, if you have another interpretation of this Rashi, please let me know, because I don't. G'day sheyisku imikaimu yud alef mitzvot. We will merit to God, okay, we have to keep 11. That's not so hard. Although we'll see, it's not so easy either. And again, it gets worse and worse. And you know, every generation, yeah, in the time of David, David and Melech, they could keep 11. Ah, okay, we're going to go through this in a second. But hold on, by Yeshayahu said six, no, 11's too much. By Micha, right, that's the famous thing, Micha, where is it? Micha, we're not going to have time to go through this whole Gemara, Jingdel. By Micha, Vamidan, Ashlosha. So Micha came along, nah. Torah's only three mitzvot in Torah, forget the other 6, 10. To do justice, to love kindness and to be modest. That's it. That's the whole Torah. Don't worry about anything else. And no Shabbos, no Kashrut. Okay, I don't exactly think you mean. No, but that's the simple meaning. I mean, what can I tell you? I didn't make this up. Chazar Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu said, I said six. No. And now I realize how hard. Only two. You only have to do two. Shimru Mishpat Vasut Stakak. That's from Daf Torah. Before Tishbav. Oh, no, it's not. It's after we read on fast days. Shimru Mishpat Vasut Stakak, Yigurba Yeshuati Lavo. Ba Amos came and said only one. Okay, anyway, so this is a mind-boggling Gemara. So it has to obviously can't be interpreted as literally as I was interpreting. Probably, I think, I hope, What it means is these, if you keep these 11 mitzvot, you'll end up keeping the whole Torah. Just focus on it. That's not what Rashi says, though. Rashi is very clear that it was too hard. You can't ask people to keep six stern mitzvot. You only ask them to keep 11 mitzvot. And, okay, they'll reward. I assume Rashi also hoped by keeping these. That's why I say this is the Ripley's Believe It or Not. I read this first time I learned this Gemara. It's like I fell off my chair. Like, what is going on here? I don't have a firm explanation. You know, yes, so these 11 will lead you. But as we'll see in 1 second, the Gemara quotes it all, but they're all based on Tehillim. I'll do it here so it's in English. If they quote Dichtiv, because there are 11 mitzvot in the 15th chapter of Tehillim. What is the 15th chapter of Tehillim? Mizmor leDavid, Hashem miyagur b'alecha. God, a song, who will dwell in your mountain? Who can come close to God? So we say 11 things. Holech tamim upo el tzedek. He walks tamim. He walks in purity with God. That's really the only mitzvah between man and God. Poel tzedek. He does righteousness. He speaks truth from the heart. Well, that's the one we'll talk about. Lo ragala lishno. He doesn't talk lashon hara. He doesn't harm his friend. Lo asalere ra. Garpa lo nasagro. He doesn't, denigrate anybody. Nivas beinav nivas. Those who are disgusting people, he doesn't like. A contemptible man is abhorrent, they translate. Yirei Hashem, but he honors those who fear God. So that's why you get maybe the other mitzvot. Nishpa lara, he never backs down his word. He says it, he keeps his word all the time. Kaspo lo natan b'neshach, he doesn't charge interest, or I guess without a heteriska, they didn't have a heteriska back there. Shochet, he doesn't take a bribe. One who does this, he will never, he'll be straight his whole life. So that's it. That's what, that's the entire Torah. That's the 613 mitzvot. So I just want to quickly go through, it's getting late. Holech tamim. So the Gemara then goes through. Who are these 11? What are these 11 mitzvot? They give examples for each one. You can over on Shavuos, take out an art scroll, a Koran, ask your rabbi to discuss this Gemara, because it's such a powerful Gemara. Holech tamim zu Avraham. Hadalech lefanai v'yat tamim. Walk before me and be pure. Okay, so we have to be like, what's Avraham? Chesed. I mean, when we think of Avraham, we don't think of Kashrut and Shabbat. We think of Chesed. To walk with God means to do Chesed. Doesn't mean to keep Shabbos. It may also mean to keep Shabbos, but that's not what the idea is, right? There was no Shabbos. Poel Tzedek and Abba Chilkiah. We don't have time to get in this amazing story. Abba Chilkiah was this, he wouldn't greet people right there. The halakhas of how you have to work an employee, we don't follow them anymore because we assume they're impossible to follow today. And the employers don't mind it. So we live in a different work environment. But you know, you're not allowed to say hello to somebody when you're at work. You're not allowed. You have to cut out 90% of the davening. You want to daven mincha at work hours? I remember Rav Schechter told us, I think I mentioned once before, the OU, the mincha minyan at 3 o'clock in the winter at the OU building, they do a hechashmon esrei. They don't do their whole repetition of the amidat mincha. So somebody complained to Rav Schechter, it's not nice. An Orthodox institution, you know, it's really better to do the whole shmon esrei. What are they, you know, not so religious in a hurry to a mincha? He says, absolutely. They're not allowed to say the whole shmon esrei. What right do you have to, maybe they can't have a mincha at all. You're working. They're taking time off from work 3 o'clock. You got it done quickly. No repetition of the Shmon Esrei right here. But that's Abba Chilkiah. He didn't talk to anybody. Okay. I just want to do one because I love this one. Dover Emet Bil Vavo. He speaks the truth in his heart. Kigon Rav Safra. So who's Rav Safra? I think the Gemara. Yeah. So it's, let's do it in Rashi instead of in Steinsos if I can find it. Why can't I find it? Mefarshim. Okay, Dover Met Bil Vavo, Mefarshim Rashi. So Rashi says, who is Rav Safra? The Shiltot is Rav, that's a Gaonic work, 8th century. The first work written after the conclusion of the Talmud. Bachei Avde Uvda, and this is the story. Rav Safra Yelachepet Zachav Limkor. Rav Safra was a salesman. He wanted to sell something. Uba Damachad Lefana Beshashia Kore Kriyatra. It's very interesting. Rav Safra's davening. He's saying Shema. It's funny. I guess he's at work, whatever. I don't know. Got all his wares in front of him. I'll give you $100. But lo and now, he didn't answer. He wasn't going to talk business in the middle of Shema. Kisavur, so the buyer thought, he doesn't want $100. You know, I'm silent because your offer is ridiculous. Give me a serious offer. Give me $200. When he finished Kriyat Shema, Amarlo Tola Chafetz V'Tamim Amart Barishana, he said to him, "Give, I'll take $100." When you said $100, I accepted. I just couldn't speak because I was in the middle of saying Shema. So in the middle of saying Shema, I can't answer you. But of course, I had in mind Dover Emet Bilvavo. He speaks the truth from his heart. In his heart, he accepted $100, and that's what you have. Would anybody in the world know? He said $200. That's what it means to be a religious Jew. Dover Emet Bilvavo. Now I said they say, I think it's a joke, but maybe it isn't a joke. What he learned from this Gemara? You should say Kriyat Shema for a long time. Okay, and the other more really powerful lesson that isn't a joke is, I think, also something so beautiful. I love the realism of our rabbis. Rav Safra, great rabbi. You know, if this was, I don't want to pick on any publisher, but you know what I mean? If this story was being written up today in certain publishers, what would they say? Rav Safra didn't hear him because he was so focused on Shema, he didn't even know that there was somebody offering him money. Here's Rav Safra saying Kriyat Shema, and the guy's earning money, and he's thinking in his mind, $100, okay, I'll accept. Like, that's what Rav Safra's doing. The guy's talking to him. Okay, he doesn't answer him, but, like, you know, he's not so focused on Shema. He's in the, maybe, I think that's so beautiful. I think that's so beautiful. So that's what it means to be Jewish. The Gemara goes through all 11. You can see, we didn't discuss, we have to leave stuff for next year, other times. Of course, the famous story with Moshe and Rabbi Kiva, we'll leave that for another time. Let's just do a very quick review. We said that there is no holiday for receiving of the Torah for good reasons. Every day is receiving of the Torah, but we had no choice after year 70, just like we made up of some good stuff. We had to do something. We have no agriculture, but Shiva is really only one of three holidays that is affiliated with Kabbalah HaTorah. The other two are Yom Kippur and the actual day we got the original Torah, because we broke that. And Shiva Sarvatamuz, the Chet HaEgel, and then Purim, as we saw already in the Gemara. We really only accepted the Gemara on Purim. Otherwise, you have an excuse, because God held the mountain over our head, but not that excuse. Now, the idea how why that obligates us for another time, but really they re-accepted it on Purim. Yom Kippurim, that's one of the connections between Purim and Yom Kippur. Then we discussed Lemor. God said Lemor, how the Jewish people had to answer. So there's Rashi says they answered yes, 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 no, no. Al hein hein, al lav lav. And, but we saw that's really a debate. Rashi's only quoting half the Mechilta, because one says yes, 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 no, no, not yes, yes, no, yes. You know, they're arguing, and as Rav Soloveitchik explains, that that's our attitude towards mitzvot. Do we accept mitzvot? Yeah, of course we accept them. Or no, I only accept them because God is commanding. I really don't want to accept them, but I'll do it because I accept you. And the Rambam says that's how it should be when it comes to ritual laws, laws that we would never have thought of on our kashrut, arayot, and shatnes are the three examples he gives. But of course, stealing and dishonoring people, that should be natural. The goal of the Torah is, we don't follow that. I don't give tzedakah because it's commanded in Torah. I give tzedakah because it's the right thing to do. That's really what the Rambam is saying. I didn't stress that before. I'm not nice to my parents because the Torah says so. No, I'm nice to my parents because that's my character. Yeah, the Torah says so also. If that's for people who don't want to be nice, but they have to do it anyways. And then we discussed that when it comes to agadic passage, this idea seems to be debated in the Talmud. The God have to hold the mountain over our head, do we accept willingly? And the Talmud is not interested in resolving because it's not meant to be resolved, because both are true. Both are true within us. I said some are this. No, we're all like both of them. Sometimes we accept the Torah willingly, sometimes we don't. When it comes to agadah, we're accepting ideas, and ideas are not monolithic at all. And therefore, the Gemara has no interest in resolving contradictory agadic passages, unlike contradictory halachic passages that we have to resolve because we have to know what we're going to do. And then we just discussed that the Torah, the 613, this sort of idea, and that's why the Ramban questions, maybe it's not true there's 613 mitzvah, maybe there are more. We have to, that reads more discussion. There's a lot to discuss on the 613 mitzvah. But whatever, Rav Simlai, this famous idea, Torah Tzibalanu, the Gematria, even though it doesn't exactly work, Torah Tzibalanu Moshe, but the amazing point that the Gemara says, but have 11. So I would have said 11. If you follow these 11, you'll like Hillel says, what's hateful to you, don't do the others. The rest is commentary. Go and learn. But that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara doesn't say these 11 are commentary. The rest are learned. The Gemara says this is it. And as Rashi explains, because it's too hard, can't tell people to keep 16. I think that's also such an important message for educators. People can't do everything. It's okay. People sin. We're humans. It's okay. Focus on these 11 things. Don't worry about everything. Anyways, there's a lot to discuss. We should have, when the Torah is given historically, it doesn't really matter, but that's lots to discuss on Shavuot. So, I wish everybody a wonderful Chag. Mark Herman is giving his class on the Gaonim today at 1 p.m. So everybody's invited. Mm-hmm. No class tomorrow, Erev Yontif. We'll continue Rabbi Liebtag on Sunday after Yontif. And please God, of course, we'll continue my Siddur class next Friday at 9:30. Hope to see you then. And I see, are there any quick questions here? I didn't look at the chat.
Shkoya.
Thank you very much. Hold on. What about Simchas Torah? We did discuss that. Israel's public wedding is the name of the Magidu parable. Okay, fine. The one about later Simchas Torah. When do we start associate bringing first fruits? No, the first fruits is a mitzvah in the Torah. Mm-hmm. The mitzvah Bikurim, unlike what some people might think, the mitzvah Bikurim begins on Shavuot. The earliest time you're allowed to bring Bikurim is on Shavuot. You cannot bring them before Shavuot, but you don't have to bring them on Shavuot. Pritim brought them all winter, all summer, till Sukkot. And one opinion in the Mishnah, this is one of the few times mentioned, Mishnah until Hanukkah. Bikurim brought it till Sukkot. The whole thing from Sukkot to Hanukkah, you bring it, but you don't say the whole thing the farmer says. So, Chag HaBikurim, it's the beginning. It's the beginning of the Bikurim. But not every Jewish farmer brought his Bikurim on Shavuot. It's the earliest time. And I assume when the Mishnah describes Bikurim, the parade they had, they had a parade. Wonderful, everybody being their first fruit. So I assume that was probably done on Shavuot or before Shavuot, day before. I don't know exactly. The Mishnah in Bikurim describes the parade of Bikurim. I know, but every day people could bring Bikurim. I imagine they had big times. Okay. But
is Rabbi Yoel giving class on Sunday?
Not this Sunday, a week Sunday. Rabbi Yoel's class, he wasn't giving every week. Rabbi Yoel, please God, will be giving on June 4th, not this Sunday. Thank you.
Bye-bye. I have a quick question. Yes or no? I have to know. There's no new login for Sunday.
No, there's no new login. It's the same login. Yeah, we always send out the login. No, there's no new login. There's no natural inclination to do wrong. Okay, we can discuss that. Cheating in business is not the first. I'm not sure what you mean. People do cheat. People have a natural desire for money. I understand why people cheat in business. That's why there are more mitzvot in the Torah about money than anything else. As Mayor Tamari points out, there are over 100 mitzvot of the 613 relate to money. Because we need every moment of the day, because we have such a desire for money, we need many mitzvot, because we don't want to keep those mitzvot, whether the Rambam says we should, but we don't. In practice, most people would like to be able to cheat a little bit, to overcharge, not to have such honest advertising, not to do well, not to keep what's in their heart. They would like to. So that's why the Torah is so many mitzvot. Even murder is not necessarily black and white. That is correct. I would say even killing is not black and white. There are situations we need guidance. Absolutely. Right. I discussed, Morris, I don't know if you're my shir, I discussed on Friday that maid is an example of somebody using your Yetzer HaTov to sin. You want the motivation can be very nice. You want to relieve suffering, but that's a problem. We can't talk about that now. Charles wore two crowns. Thank you, Irene, at the coronation. There you go. Not seven ishma. I don't know if that's why, but a lot of his coronation was taken from our sources, excepting the Torah and the key. Yes, I mean, I didn't mean it an act of stupidity, but the Gemara does say that. The Gemara does say, What a foolish people. They accepted without saying. Again, we have both these views. Tremendous faith, because they're both true. On the one that it is, of course, I believe it's beautiful and everything value. But you can understand there is a view in the sages. What are these people out of their minds? You're going to accept the covenant your whole life to do for an entire people, and you don't even know what's in it? So that's the debate. I really have to go is the Meraklim. That's really the same debate. We'll read it in a couple of weeks. Was it good to send the Meraklim? Rashi said, no, they should have had faith in God. Well, they should have faith in God. That's not how we operate. We don't rely on God. You have to figure out yourself. You got to live naturally. You got to send advanced spies to figure out what's going on. Right. So all these things are argument. Yes. And so we praise the Naaseh V'Nishma. But obviously, not everybody praises that, or I think it's true. As we praise Naaseh V'Nishma, we realize the danger in that. They're both true. Like I said, we don't resolve these contradictions. Okay, I want to wish everybody a Chag Sameach, and thank you very much. Okay, everybody, Chag Sameach. I got to run, and be well. We look forward to learning with you soon. And please invite a friend. Chag Sameach. Bye-bye. Shabbat Shalom. Bye-bye.
Shabbat Shalom.